In 2003, I was trying to graduate seminary. I was enrolled at Meadville Lombard to be a distance learner and had given up learning at Bangor Seminary. That January, I was out in Chicago, and I simply couldn't make it. It meant that I would need to be away from baby Henry. That big guy was less than a year old. Couldn't do it. Went to my advisor, David Bumbaugh. David said, go back to Bangor. Just get the degree. We need you in the movement more than we need you here at Meadville. And he added, did you know that Bangor Seminary, a UCC Christian seminary, is having their convocation and you could get back in time for it? And the speaker is UU minister, Forest Church. Do you all know Forest Church, the name? He's kind of our most prominent UU theologian in the 20th century. Well, maybe along with James Luther Adams. Forrest had been given a terminal diagnosis and wrote a book about it called The Cathedral of the World, A Universalist Theology. And here are some of his thoughts from that book. Death is not a curse to be outwitted, no matter the cost. Death is the natural pivot on which life turns, without which life as we know it could not be. A pro-life support position is not always a pro-life position. When we can no longer hold on with purpose, let us go. Let us die with dignity and grace. Going on, he says, so it's pretty simple for me. Love when you can. Do the work that is yours to do. Be the person that is yours to be at any given time. Think to wish for what is yours at this very moment. To love, to serve, to touch, to know. Think to wish for all that is yours to have. Think to wish for all that is yours to do. And think to wish that you might be who it is that you might most fully be. Avoid wishful thinking. Avoid the traps and pitfalls of nostalgia for the past. Savor every moment as it passes and enlist yourself in saving that which can be saved this very moment, in order that it too may endure for others to enjoy. From an ethics article put out by the BBC in 2014, entitled, What is Good Death? They give 12 points that came up for them when they surveyed people to indicate what 70% of America thinks is a good death. The quote from the article is, in a Gallup poll in America, more than 70% of individuals surveyed found dying in pain or alone without the chance to say goodbye was fearful. Here are the 12 points that would help with a good death. To know when death is coming and to understand what can be expected. To be able to retain control of what happens. To be afforded dignity and privacy. To have control over pain relief and other symptom control. To have choice and control over where death occurs, at home or elsewhere. To have access to information and expertise of whatever kind is necessary. To have access to any spiritual or emotional support required. To have access to hospice care in any location, not only in hospice. To have control over who is present and who shares the end. To be able to issue advance directives which ensure wishes are respected. To have time to say goodbye and control over other aspects of timing. To be able to leave when it is time to go and not have life prolonged pointlessly. This is a great list. this morning, hospice will come up often, but that's not the only way to have a good death. I did not ever imagine, growing up or even into my young adulthood, that death would become such a focus in my life. My own mother was a fairly early hospice patient, dying at home in hospice care in 1983. Perhaps that experience awoke in me the drive to help others navigate what we go through at the end of life, the dying person, their loved ones, and anything to help us all embrace life so fully, so that death is simply a part. When I chose to talk about death today, I did not know that it would be so soon after losing two dearly departed. Remembering them is not the same thing as falling sway to nostalgia. It's always good to think about life and the life that we've had, even at its end. A good death is part of life, not afterlife. A good death looks different for different people, but the one thing humans have in common is that we will all have an end. Why wouldn't we try to make it as good as any other part of our life? As we worked on all of these different areas, like family, spirituality, vocation, all of the things that we loved, we always thought about how to do that really well, how to make it good. So why wouldn't we treat death like that? It's a goal of mine to be more like the great hospice workers I have known, befriending death as the eventual end to life. What would make it good? Let's explore a good death for the dying and for their loved ones and caregivers. And we don't just mean that moment that life ends. Many times I have heard, "When I die," and the next lines are what they want their funeral to include. I recall being at a reception after a service which was very elegant. The reception had hired caterers walking around with plates of fine food and drink, and it was very fitting for that deceased person. I ran into a woman I respected and liked very much, and she surprised me with her candid response to this reception. I hope that when I die, the gathering is nice like this, but also I hope it will be boisterous and that people will know it's okay to laugh. In the current setting, there were people laughing, but the overall mood was somber. I mean, it was a funeral. The person who wished for laughter is professionally a very serious woman, highly regarded professionally, and of course, she's warm and funny and all of that. It was so heartening for me to hear her say that she valued what was dear to her, and not just her career, not just her accomplishments, right up to the end and beyond. She was not concerned that her mourners would recognize her accomplishments and that they would get all of those listed correctly, as much as she wanted them to remember her. Her full character, including laughter. It may seem counterintuitive at a funeral, but when we understand, as she did, that death is part of life, why would it not include all the best parts, including laughter, or art, or music? A good death is often enriched by music and art, and why not? The rest of life is made so much richer. Why wouldn't death? One person whose death I attended owned a lot of art, mostly paintings. She dearly loved them. One of the things she required, scheduled to be changed whenever she was given her meds, was a different painting put on the easel at the foot of her bed so that she could enjoy in her last days and weeks all of her beautiful artwork through her home, although she was bedbound. So every time I visited, there would be a different piece of work on the easel. A few times I attended deaths where everybody around them in the room sang them out right through their final breath. What a good death for them and for those left behind. That kind of good death happens when we've let ourselves be known by others so that when we need spokespeople or spokesingers, there are people who can accompany us and help us. incorporating death's inevitable chain of small losses, increasing disabilities, and loss of function does not have to mean that the dying person loses their agency. Many times when a person faces death quickly, without time to ponder or plan or revel in life's memories because of a sudden unexpected death, others have to make decisions for them. And this brings me to an important part of living. Live life with ideas about what makes for a good death, and then talk about it. Talk about it and tell people what you want. Fill out the paperwork, but also have the conversations, not just about your funeral, but while you are well, or when it is clear that the end is in sight, be it months or hours, think about what would be meaningful for you. We don't have to wait until we're dying to think about these things. Being called to ministry means finding out things about oneself, death and people who are going through it, plus the weight of grief for their loved ones, has turned out to be the most important work I do. I do love baptizing kids and I do love weddings, but really, we're all going to end. The very first time I visited a dying person as professional clergy and presided over an end-of-life ritual was here in Bucksport about 30 years ago. I was working as a hospice chaplain in Blue Hill Home Health Hospice while I went to seminary. Sometimes getting a new patient to agree to that initial visit was a hard sell, because for some, to have the chaplain visit meant sure death. Really, when you all think about me visiting, do you immediately think about death? You don't have to answer that, but I may as well have had on a big black cape and carry a scythe, Grim Reaper style. I still think about that, being aware that not just death is scary for people, but for some, the whole concept of clergy and a church service and God make people shy away from putting themselves on that path. The best lesson I learned from that experience with getting to know somebody in their dying season and then working with their beloveds after is to meet each person where they are. We learn this in seminary and in chaplain training, but actually doing the work gives form to the idea. Listening to what they think or hope is the point, not telling them what to do or expect based on clergy beliefs or religious teachings. That first service in Bucksport was for a man who had no family, but he had a couple of good friends, and they saw him through. They stayed with him, literally stayed in his house with him through his last days. When we all met together to plan his service, he was touched that they thought about having a service. I trusted that they would get done what they needed to, because the communications were open and freely spoken. Now, because his theology told him that he would know what happened after he died, he was sure of this. He would know if we did what he asked. So there I was on a very hot August day at a graveside service with a little stool next to me with a boombox on it, playing his favorite song from the most memorable vacation he had taken. It was a good death. People tend to die as they live. There's not a lot of deathbed conversions happening or any big changes that can't be assigned to meds or illness. Therefore, it behooves us to embrace life fully, all the way, not just at the end, to include what dying might look like for us, the whole season. I always hope that people find solace and support for some kind of end-of-life ritual. It's not like I'm such a church person, you gotta have one. It's more like I'm an anthropologist and understand that we're all human. All through time, in every culture, every group has had life's rituals, for birth, for the start of a family, and for death. Rituals bind us in humanity. I appreciate this religion. I appreciate my chaplain training to help me move through the world with my particular set of skills, which some people find a little wonky, that I'm so comfortable with death, to help people be less afraid of death. One time when I was serving Elkhart, one of our elders stood up. He was a great hospice volunteer. And he said, "I'm comfortable with my death and I'm comfortable with all of yours." I don't know how much chat he got at coffee hour that day. But I admire that sense of living to help people be less afraid of death and less likely to think that clergy involvement has to mean judgment or rigidity. Many people feel that religion and its clergy are judgy. Have you ever heard that? No way would they find comfortable, no way would they feel comfortable having people come to a church for them. When I met with a dying person and family, whenever I meet with a dying person, whether it's with their family or alone, where they don't know me beforehand, it's often assumed that I'm going to try and talk them into some kind of everlasting salvation or some kind of church service. Dying people or their loved ones who didn't do the whole organized religion life thing sometimes find themselves in circumstances of meeting a clergy or a chaplain, a stranger, and that person is supposed to support them at this sacred time. Often it all goes really well, but dying people, those who know they are grappling with realizing their time is short and finite. At this point, life goes from regular time to sacred time, and lots of typical concerns disappear. Comfort and ease of mind has never been so important. It was a profound moment for me to sit down with a dearly beloved aged person whose partner was dying. She was already only partially conscious, would be dying at home. He and I sat and talked in her presence so she could listen if she wanted to, and I laid out for him what the next days might be like. Not so much medically, they knew that. We touched on things like, sometimes our bodies hold on much longer than we imagined. I was able to say that, yes, the person dying is the focus, but it can be uncomfortable or even painful for caregivers and family to go through that. And it's okay. It's okay to notice that you're suffering too. To watch the breathing slow down, the jaw go slack, maybe have trouble breathing, and then be like that for days instead of minutes, like on TV. That can be painful to sit with, and we don't need to feel bad about it. I also made sure that she heard both of us say that whenever she felt ready to go, she could. Maybe those with her would know it and be there, or maybe she would go while everybody was asleep or running errands. And however it happened, it would be okay. Talking through the unknown, not just of afterlife, not just the service, but of what life will be like as we go through that season of death, helps us to have a good death. One man I know, a church stalwart who had helped with and attended dozens of celebrations of life, had his own ideas about his own good death season. He called everyone who would likely be at his funeral and had them come to his living wake. He set up a throne and put tables next to it so that he could eat and drink while people stood up and talked about him in front of him. He got to hear all of the things people loved about him and gave them, especially those from a different time or place, the chance to say a real goodbye. Fearing death, fearing what comes next or doesn't, can hold us prisoner. Being realistic about what our end of life might look like will be easier if we understand death and life together, and then experience both as fully as we can. May we end with this thought, also from Forest Church. Whenever we give our hearts in love, the burden of our vulnerability grows. We risk being rebuffed or embarrassed or inadequate. Beyond these things, we risk the enormous pain of loss. When those we love die, a part of us dies with them. When those we love are sick, in body or spirit, we too feel the pain. All of this is worth it, especially the pain. If we insulate our hearts from suffering, we shall only subdue the very thing that makes life worth living. We cannot protect ourselves from loss. We can only protect ourselves from the death of love. We are left only with the aching hollow of regret, that haunting emptiness where love might have been.